thing. You can actually get your voice out, unlike other radio stations, which demand that you get commercial sponsors to back you and that you afford by their accord by their bureaucratic restrictions or their content restrictions or the FCC's oh-so-gentle predilection that you not say fuck on the air, but that it's okay to bomb the hell out of a population and present massive propaganda for a government that's doing that. It's all pretty disgusting. But here at Free Radio, we try to take the opposite approach, and we invite you to do the same. The call-in number at Free Radio is 427-3772, 427-FRSC. That's the number that puts you live on the line with the community. This is a show that we do that I do twice a week. On Sunday, we go till 1:30 in the afternoon, and on Thursday, it's from 6 to 8 in the evenings. Civil rights on the streets is the focus. And, of course, the focus here in Santa Cruz is, here in this joyous holiday season, the inn is about to boot out Camp Paradise, the group of folks in the self-managed, homeless-run, clean and sober campground that for so many months was able to not simply survive successfully along the San Lorenzo River, but clean up the environment, provide community services to the community generally, and provide, of course, the broader service of a sanctuary for people who have no legal place to go and who want to be clean and sober and who want to help the community. And this, of course, impressed various segments of the community that in spite of hostility from the police department, Parks and Rec, city manager's office, and city council, the community supported Camp Paradise, putting the city council in a position where it just couldn't quite bring itself to sweep away the camp in the fashion that it's been, of course, dealing with all the rest of the homeless community, the 1,000 to 2,000 homeless people who are outside tomorrow night, tonight, and last night. And so Camp Paradise, by standing up for itself, as Dignity Village did in Portland, Oregon, as Tent City 3 is doing in Seattle, as Camp Goodwill is doing in Ontario, Canada, Toronto, the camp was able to survive. Of course, it was washed away by the river about 2 weeks ago. The city, violating its commitment, had no evacuation plan, had no support plan. But finally, thanks to Mayor Crone, I guess, and the city manager, eager to not make too bad an impression on the community and maybe to support the camp. Well, it's actually, I think, to stop them from setting up somewhere else illegally immediately. They provided for motel rooms, and that was at the Seabreeze Inn for 2 weeks. That time now ends tomorrow, Monday at 11 o'clock in the morning. And when it ends, it means the camp has got to go somewhere else. And, of course, the city, whether it's Mark Premack or Scott Kennedy or Ed Porter or our dear former mayor Tim Green Party IM, Fitzmaurice, has provided no legal place for them to go. We're not talking about luxury hotel accommodations or even motel vouchers. We're talking about dealing straight with folks, about giving them a campsite that they can use. It is not being used by someone else in the many, many pieces of public property in the Santa Cruz City area. And I have a thick list of them that I got from the city manager's office a couple weeks ago. And actually, in the studio with me, I have a Camp Paradise activist, Chris Fredrickson, who's kind of poring over the list, trying to figure out which of these properties is most likely to be usable, create the lowest public impact on the community, and be most suitable for Camp Paradise folks. That decision-making process is partially been done, is partially going on at the time. And Camp Paradise is going to need help moving from the motels that it's currently in to the campsite, and then help staying at the campsite and making a profitable continuation, a productive, peaceful, and it's actually a self-protective continuation. This is really an exercise in survival for low-income people. It is not something that they're doing for fun because they want to butt their nose at authority or, you know, challenge authority. They have no choice. The city has had months to deal with this issue, and unfortunately, like other cities, it has refused to deal with the issue, and until it is forced to deal with the issue with the de facto reality of a campground set up and unable to, you can't avoid that prospect, then when that is happening, the city will have to deal with it, and it'll probably become legalized, like Dignity Village was legalized last summer, and I have some tapes on that I hope to be playing today. I finally got the videotapes of the city council meeting in Portland, Oregon, that legalized Dignity Village. And it's in Seattle. Tent City 3, run by Cher, was given legal sanction by a judge, or at least the attempt to sweep them away was turned down by a judge. They haven't still got legislative sanction up in Seattle. And I'm not quite sure of the situation in Ottawa. But I'm thinking that there has been a call from Dignity Village up in Portland for supporting Camp Paradise as a sort of a sister city. And I'm going to read you what I received from, I believe it was John Hubbard or Jack Tafari, to the residents of Camp Paradise and to the Santa Cruz community, as I pore over my many pages of script here. Script isn't quite the word. Written material. Oh, boy. Of course, as usual, it's microscopic and hard to sort out, but I'm going to find it. What it was, in effect, was a call for supporting a Camp Paradise and for being part of the sister city, being a sister city, a sister homeless city for Camp Paradise. Here's a little something from San Francisco, and I believe the Coalition on Homelessness may well also be weighing in publicly in support of Camp Paradise, as I think it already has in its newspaper street sheet. But here is something from San Francisco. This was sent on a week ago Tuesday, and the subject is urgent homeless deaths. The city of San Francisco has reached an all-time low. After years of tracking each of our brothers and sisters who've died on the street, public health has decided this year to cease all gathering of this information. The reason they gave is that the unit responsible is working on bioterrorism. Each individual who has died on the streets is honored and remembered each year on the first day of winter, and that's going to happen here in Santa Cruz, too, on the 21st at the Homeless Services Center. The names of the deceased are read across the country at candlelight vigils. The information has been vital to San Francisco to track where the city failed the poorest among us and what changes must be made to prevent future deaths. We are outraged that those who have died homeless are no longer of interest to the Department of Public Health. Please call Dr. Michael Katz, ASAP, and tell him that this is completely unacceptable. Homelessness has killed thousands, anthrax, only a handful. And it gives a phone number for him in San Francisco. The multi-denominational homeless death memorial is set for December 20th, Thursday at 5:30 at the Civic Center in San Francisco. As we'll have no official list, we are asking that organizations bring the names of those they know that died homeless this year in San Francisco. And please do not submit the names of those who died in permanent housing. If you cannot make the memorial, have a list, email it back to them. And if you want to help out this, if you know folks in San Francisco and you want to tell the coalition what's going on, you can leave a message on my message machine, and that's also a message machine for HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, and the number is easy to number to remember. It's 423-4833, 423-HUFF, HUF, 423-HUF. And that's from San Francisco. And again, I'm taking a second look around here. Here we go. This is a note from Jack Tafari, chairman of the Dignity Village group. This is to Robert, Becky, Carl, and whoever handles the email at Camp Paradise. Last night at a village meeting at Dignity Village, a motion was put on the floor and passed unanimously that our village will begin exploring ways to formally link up with Camp Paradise in a sister city relationship. What we are looking to do is to link up in a way that would be mutually beneficial to Dignity and to Paradise with exchanges of strategy and tactics, to pool our knowledge and what we have learned, perhaps to exchange members of our respective communities for our social, cultural, and political betterment. We feel that a sister city relationship between our communities would, by shining light upon us, protect and permit us to endure and prevail. I pass my words on to you also to Ibrahim Mubarak, Secretary of our Council, J.B. Cup, our Security Coordinator, and John Hubbard, Coordinator of our Site Development Team and good supporter. We ask to hear back from you and Camp Paradise co-founder Larry Templeton at your nearest convenient opportunity. Unity, love, and respect, Jack Tafari, Chairman of Dignity Village, Inc. And I actually responded by phone to that message today. Larry Templeton, whom I spoke to by phone, and will be speaking to again shortly on the air here, gave his personal stamp of approval. And I think Chris, once she gets over this bad cough she has, can probably talk about that on the air, too, and talk about her own support for that motion of support from Dignity Village and the desire for support between cities of homeless folks who are trying successfully to protect themselves and to shelter vulnerable people and to do what the cities have refused to do. And apparently the cities are content to let people die and not even to tabulate the deaths anymore in San Francisco. So narrowly focused are they on this, frankly, bullshit bioterrorism nonsense that is spread all over the place. The real bioterrorism to me has always been people like the tobacco manufacturers who are supported by the government, who kill about 40,000 people a month. But of course, they get subsidized for that kind of crap. It's actually more than 40,000. But it's your obscenity as usual in modern day society, and that's how it goes. So you're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. I'm going to sort of roll things forward here. What we're going to do here is try to give you a brief musical break, and then we're going to come back with either some updates or a direct discussion of the crisis Camp Paradise is in. And for those of you who want to help the crisis and who want to help this, it's 24 hours away, the eviction of dozens of people onto the streets and the prospect of a city slashing their tents and hauling them away if they try to set up at a new location, and they haven't been given any other location, so they have no other choice but to become, as Afghani people have by the millions, refugees, even here in Santa Cruz. So to help out, you might want to give a call to activist Carl Wilson of Friends of Camp Paradise. He is he has a phone line, he has a voicemail as well, and you can try to reach him and offer your assistance. They're going to need vehicles, they're going to need people with cameras, they're going to need all the help they can get. And what I'm going to do now is give us a little more Grito Serpentino. And don't go away, because we are going to need you.
Huge crowd, probably the largest I've ever seen in City Council here. It's about 740.
You are here for item number 31. Could some of you wait outside
Santa Cruz City Council?
Like I just said, there's fire code issues
last
right now.
Tuesday. The council that refused to put anything on the agenda about the
Yeah, and Mayor Crones just asked to postpone three items and ask other people to wait outside.
Eleanor is asking to speak first. Who do you so talk? Who should talk to? Or quickly or something?
Talk to him. I'll tell him.
Half an hour, and then we will go to back to item 30. How many folks want to address the council on oral communication? How many hands do you count, by the way?
Here, Christopher Cone counting the number of people who want oral communication. I think it's about 23. After making that elaborate count, he decides not to allow any more oral communication than usual. Plus promises to Camp Paradise that there would be an item about decriminalizing camping in church parking lots, Scott Kennedy, as well as the long-awaited alternative sites report were not on the agenda. There was not even an update.
I live in a handicapped unit in a HUD-subsidized housing complex owned by Mercy Services Corporation here in Sanford, located on Sycamore Street. I was approved for a December 1st move-in to a handicapped unit in another subsidized complex in town. This one is for disabled persons only. Upon receiving written confirmation of my move-in date to the new complex, I gave a 30-day notice to vacate my residence at Mercy. Due to circumstances beyond my control, 10 days after I gave my 30-day notice, the deal with the new apartment fell through. I immediately notified Mercy Housing by phone and by hand-delivered letter, withdrawing my 30-day notice. And as always, I paid my rent on schedule for December 1st. Mercy Housing Corporation is now evicting me. I was served. And if they go through with it, I will become homeless. I have nowhere to go. Mercy Property Supervisor for Santa Cruz, Steve Farmer, says his position is, if it were anyone else in the world other than Eleanor Foresta, he would accept the withdrawal. I believe him, because without a tenant here who set fires in the laundry rooms and other places around the property, and he didn't evict him. We've got another tenant who slashed tires on another disabled person's car, and he didn't evict him. And not to mention the assistant manager's husband who assaulted me a year ago and was convicted of that assault. Steve Farmer didn't evict him either. But we've got a disabled woman here, me, whose only crime is that I stood up for my rights by trying to obtain that which I require as a disabled person to live in the handicap unit I rent from Mercy. This at no cost to them. This action to evict me is purely retaliatory on the part of Steve Farmer, Mercy's property supervisor for Santa Cruz. I don't believe that this is what the Sisters of Mercy had in mind when they started Mercy Housing, nor do I believe that they would approve if they knew about it. If you agree with me, please call Steve Farmer at 471-1914 and tell him not to evict a disabled person in the name of Mercy. Thank you.
What you hear now is Christopher Crone warning me that because I moved the microphone from this disabled woman who was seated at a chair on a second microphone back to the original podium where folks were normally giving speaking at oral communications, if I did that again, I would be arrested and or evicted from the council. This is on Christopher Crone's first general meeting that he made this. This is Mayor Crone, that great liberal mayor that everyone has been looking forward to seeing as a change from Fuhrer Fitzmaurice, or Emperor Fitzmaurice, or Mayor Fitzmaurice, if you will, the bogus Green Party mayor, whose greenness apparently extends about an inch in, and then after that, there's some kind of other color underneath. This is the city council meeting of December 11th we're listening to, where, as I said, they spent hours and hours and hours and an additional day on other agenda items, but not 1 minute of agenda time on homeless issues, and they cut off homeless people repeatedly in their willingness to, I should say repeatedly, as a matter of policy. Oral communication was cut back to a 30-minute period when there were 23 people who wanted to speak. You might say cut back is what they normally give you, 30 minutes. They do normally give you 30 minutes, but this is the last council meeting of the year. This is the year where council members had promised members of the homeless community there would be action taken in this winter crisis where you can't get into the armory unless you have picture ID, and even if you can, there are only 100 spaces for 1,000 to 2,000 people. Outside the city council meeting, we were trying to set up a small pup tent and encouraging people to sign a petition and providing hot soup, HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, HOME, Homes on Wheels, and the occasional Camp Paradise resident was there as well. I believe the next speaker you're going to hear is Larry Templeton at the mic, although I'm not sure.
But please don't move around.
Christopher Cohen says, please don't move around. That's his new order of the day. So people are supposed to remain still.
Good evening, Mayor and Council members. I'm here to ask the Council to pass a resolution.
And this is a sort of a person who's asking for a resolution on another subject, and that's one of the problems with oral communication. So much has tried to cram into so little time, and in spite of the plentiful promises that politicians give us at election time that this is going to be changed, that there will be a real public process for people to actually be able to say what they need to say and present public issues, that has become even less possible under Christopher Crone, Kim Fitzmaurice, Keith Sugar, and no doubt would even be less possible under Scott Kennedy and Mark Premack, who, while they originally were supportive of Camp Paradise, had absolutely nothing to say at this council session about Camp Paradise and the need to have the police hold off while they seek an alternate campsite this winter, as they are needing to do tomorrow. And within 24 hours, they will have to find an alternate campsite. Camp Paradise will have to find an alternate campsite, or else people who are protecting each other will no longer be able to protect each other. People who are disabled will not have the benefit of a protective encampment, and Camp Paradise and that community will be dispersed, and that's something that I don't think this community should allow to happen. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. I'm your host, Bathrobes Pierre Robert. Stay with us.
My name is David Allen. I'm with the Home on Wheels. Good afternoon, good evening, Council. I'm basically here in protest of the City Council's position on the homeless issue at the moment. Concerned that the winter's here, the rain's here, and there's a crisis going on out there, I would deeply ask that the Council somehow bring some issue for resolvement of the camping ban to the board so that the citizens of Santa Cruz, which are invisible out there in the rain, the dying, the sweating, the working, the mothers, the fathers, the children that aren't considered to be homeless, they're not interested in being involved in the core, have some kind of legitimate voice in decision-making on this council. Up to this point, the council has refused to acknowledge that there is an issue, at least bring it to the floor to get some kind of discussion or some kind of activity, some kind of resolution about resolving of the issue. Second of all, with the issue of emergency housing right now, emergency beds, there's a homes on wheels, people are being asked to live in their vehicles, to being taking the time to take care of themselves in some manner, and yet we're still being treated as, what should I say, criminals. We're getting tickets, we're getting rousted, we're getting our homes, our vans, our mobile
they got a way of life taken away from us. If the city council has no other feeling toward us than to continue to let this kind of injustice continue, I don't really see how we can say this is really happening. For myself personally, there's an invisible crowd out there, a visible citizen, that chooses not to deal with the city council. Then the city council needs to take some kind of stance to ensure their civil rights. I hear about bus lanes, I hear about low-income housing, yet still I don't hear about the homeless issue. I hear about Camp Paradise as a homeless issue. That's great, you know. I'd be happy to get a voucher for a motel room as a homeless person. I'm sure a lot of other people will as well. But this divide and conquer tactics of the homeless, of the city council toward homeless people, toward Camp Paradise, toward other camping people, such as myself as Homes on Wheels, that I should be able to get a ticket, be a fine, and be criminalized for Camp Paradise should be able to put in a motel room, is kind of sad. It's Christmas time. Let's all be merry. Thank you.
Santa Cruz City Council, again, December 11th, and Homes on Wheels spokesperson David Allen essentially upbraiding the City Council for doing nothing, having nothing on its agenda, and of course, the City Council ignoring him. Although there was quite a large crowd of affordable housing folks in the crowd with signs and a lot of women of color there, could have been the basis for a sit-in or a tent city. And we actually ended up with one tent and a few of us hardy white boys in the tent, but that's the beginning. Tomorrow there are going to be a lot of tents out there because there are going to be families who need to be sheltered and they don't have no shelter. And there are going to be homeless people who need to be sheltered and they're going to have, I'm not sure where it's going to be, whether it's going to be at City Hall, whether it's going to be at a campsite that the City Council said they would investigate but have taken no steps to do, even though the City Manager's Office was directed to do this 2 months ago. We're going to need the support of the community, and those Camp Paradise and the entire homeless community is going to need the support of the community in finally turning things around this winter and taking some real action so that the City Council just doesn't get away with these meaningless, endless promises at election time and then no action whatsoever when the weather gets cold and the shelters are full and the City Council goes off for its Christmas turkey dinner and its month's vacation. And that is something we can't accept. So there's a couple of other articles I want to pass on to you here, and I'm going to be reading that here in a moment. There's actually an interesting story about Walmart, and you may remember, I'm not much of a Walmart buff. I don't like chain drug stores or chain stores generally, but here's something. Walmart has always been apparently willing to allow people to camp in its parking lots. Here's a story about that from, I think it's about a year ago, but still current. Pablo Candelaria Jr. smiled as he opened the discolored door to the RV, then maneuvered through clutter to his brown, lopsided driver's chair and shared fast food with his family. The retiree said he lives in this Mesa Walmart's parking lot because it is free and near his wife's part-time job. An oversized parking lot, 24-hour shopping, and cheap deals make Walmart a magnet for the Candelarias and anyone else with a camper and no place else to go. The same characteristics that have made the store a household word, bargain prices and easy access, have lured campers into its parking lots for a free and convenient way to catch some Z's. Some of the weary travelers taking refuge under the store's fluorescent lights fit the stereotype of roaming retirees, but others aren't living out of their campers by choice. Candelaria, a pastor and retired Allied Signal employee, camps at Walmart until his next retirement check comes in, and he can afford to go back to the $10-a-night campground where he usually stays. Pablo, his wife, Josie, and their mentally disabled sons, Joe, 38, and Alex, 36, have been living in their RV for several weeks and at Walmart for several days. The air in their camper is hot and sticky and smells of must and onion rings. Bags of clothes are piled into cracks and crevices. Since there are only three beds in the RV, the sons alternate spending the night in the bed of Pablo's truck, loaded down with an old mattress, laundry detergent, and a spare tire. If not for Walmart, Pablo said, he and his family would have had a hard time finding someplace to go. Somebody suggested Walmart, he said. Somebody told me they wouldn't say anything. They've been real nice about it. We use the restrooms and things. Campers don't seem to mind that the late-night collection of RVs sparked in this East Mesa Walmart's lot doesn't have the same atmosphere as a typical campground, where retired adventurers stay up late playing Scrabble or Uno, and children roast wieners and marshmallows by campfire. In fact, some of them seem to prefer it. Ross and Marga Smith, Retirees from Oregon have been traveling for the last year and have spent only 2 months somewhere besides Walmart. They said they make an extra effort to pick up trash and bring in carts for the Walmarts where they stay. They think it's great that homeless people can count on Walmart for a safe place to spend the night. Not everyone has a big income, Margus. People don't have the money to spend at campsites. It's nice that there are places like this. Homeless shelters get overcrowded. The Smiths say that the management in Flagstaff, all this is in Arizona, told us he'd rather have us in his lot and safe than pulled off the side of the highway somewhere, Ross Smith said. Walmart has always been good to RVers, said Lloyd Bush of Washington. He said Walmart's founder was an RVer. His take was that we're going to watch his store, and his store will watch my RV. Lloyd and his wife stay at Walmart's when they pull into town late or can't find a campground. Jim Bissio, a Walmart spokesman, verified Bush's take on the Walmart-RV relationship. Walmart values its RV customers, he said. They are some of our best customers. Our intent is to satisfy the needs of everyone in the surrounding businesses. Mark Heimbecker, 45, traveled with his family from Michigan and considers Walmart one of the safest places to pull off when he's too tired to keep driving. Everyone says don't stop in a rest stop. They're not safe. Use a truck stop or Walmart's. The safety that comes with the comfort and familiarity of the family superstore was one of the reasons Janet Buscala of Missouri spent her first night in her new RV in the store's lot. She spent several days to get there to get her camper ready to haul her dinghy, a vehicle to drive when she hits a destination. I've been here quite a while now. I hate to say how long. I just got my hitch put on today, though, she said. Walmart campers stay from a few hours to a few months at one store. Some move on to campgrounds, some to other Walmarts. We'll probably stay the rest of the week, Pablo Candelaria said. Then we'll move on. I don't know where. Probably Kmart, he laughed. As for the Smiths, they have no intention of straying from their tried and true campsite. With the world it is today, more places should be like Walmart, Ross Smith said. And this was May 1st, 2000. The story is from an old internet story. But I thought it's an example of, an unusual thing, because I guess the founder of Walmart had a real soft spot in his heart for campers. And I was glad to read about that. I only learned about it actually only recently, even though I've been interested in civil rights for homeless people for several decades at least. There's some bad news from Richmond. December 12th, the City Council, that's Richmond, California, city right above Berkeley, the City Council passed an ordinance Tuesday night banning camping in any street, park, or public area in the city. At the last minute, Councilman Jim Rogers added a provision lessening the penalties in the ordinance and creating a city fund for additional beds and homeless shelters. Many Marina Bay residents spoke at Tuesday's meeting in favor of the legislation, emphasizing safety and public health issues. They were balanced by an equal number of homeless advocates who characterized the measure as heartless. Councilwoman Maria Viramontes, the lone dissenter, said 80% of Richmond's homeless population are women with children who need shelter during the cold winter months. That's quite hard for me to believe, but I suppose that could be true. Basically, we're criminalizing homelessness in Richmond, she said. Should our approach be to stick homeless people in jail or give them a penalty they can't pay? That's no answer. Mayor Irma Anderson has proposed a regional homeless summit to take place in January. No doubt after homeless people have either fled or frozen or have had to work out their own problems. They'll sit down and talk about it some more. That's from Richmond, California, at their Tuesday City Council meeting. And there actually is another story from a sympathetic reporter, which is a rarity, up in Richmond. I'm going to read that story about the situation. Assuming if I can find it here. Here we go. December 14th. And there's actually an earlier story. Let me see if I can find the earlier story on that issue. Actually, for once, have some of these papers available, and it may actually be here. Let's see. We've always got plenty to read on this show, and it's usually not too well organized, but let's just see here. Last show was the 13th. We are now at the 16th. And by the way, you're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. And we do have a call-in number if you want to be a part of this process, 427-3772. Here we go. It's by Karen Hershenson of the Contra Costa Times on December 9th. I may have actually read this story. I'm going to read it again. Hey, whatever happened to goodwill toward men? It's the flip side of seasonal kindness in Richmond, where city leaders are putting the squeeze on homeless people. Yep. Temperatures are plummeting and unemployment soaring, but the not-so-wise men and women on the city council are forging ahead with an ordinance that makes it illegal to be just about anywhere in public with a sleeping bag, even a piece of cardboard for shelter. Basically, it criminalizes being homeless, says Councilwoman Maria Viramontes, an opponent. The anti-camping ordinance squeaked through on a preliminary vote November 27th without so much as a peep from the community. Even die-hard homeless advocates were blindsided. It's up for a second and final vote on Tuesday, and it passed, unfortunately. So if you care, get yourself to Richmond City Hall, 7 p.m. This is a very rare newspaper writer who writes an article like this. Sounds like me, actually. True, the city has large numbers of homeless people who cluster around the waterfront near Costco, even in the parking lots of swanky Marina Bay. But with the recession deepening, it's time to step back and address this growing crisis instead of making it simply illegal to bed down in public. The numbers are shocking. An estimated 60 to 70,000 without homes in the Bay Area, according to hands-on workers. Shelters are overflowing, including Richmond's 75-bed Brookside, which currently has a waiting list of 218. The 16-bed Family Crisis Center in Livermore was forced to close just last month because funding evaporated. So where are these people supposed to go? The North Pole, perhaps, with Santa and the elves? Now is the time when agencies typically nail down emergency housing and residents dig deep in a burst of holiday generosity. One advocate calls it the high holy season for the homeless. But with jobs disappearing and September 11th funds getting the lion's share of donations, nonprofits are hurting, including those that serve this population. Here it's Christmas. Usually this time of year we're talking about winter relief programs, said Viramontes, but in Richmond we're talking about making it a crime to have a sleeping bag. Which is ironic, because Contra Costa County has been doling out sleeping bags to the dozens that are unable to have shelter, she says. If they're willing to freeze to death outside, they wouldn't be breaking the law. The city is planning a homeless summit in January with experts and non-experts alike invited to brainstorm about the issue and offer solutions. But why not wait until then to begin implementing the measures, says Viramontes. Of course, Viramontes was the lone dissenter in this anti-camping law. Makes sense to me. Homelessness has deep, far-reaching roots, not just in poverty, but mental illness, drug and alcohol abuse, and domestic violence. Many in this swelling population are women with children. Busting folks for living in their cars or on the street won't make it go away. Ordinance backers insist they're responding to persistent complaints about raggedy vehicles in neighborhoods and bushes used as bathrooms. Councilman Tom Butt says it's meant to plug the gap in the city's ability to deal with those problems. And thanks to Butt for returning calls, Mayor Irma Anderson, a public health nurse, wasn't so kind. He points to an exception in the ordinance for those who show need, such as a woman fleeing an abusive relationship, and he's confident the council will come up with the cash to add 24 beds to Brookside. We're really trying to find a middle ground, he says. It's not like somebody decided, hey, it's December, Christmas is right around the corner, let's see how mean and evil we can be. But even the most positive spin makes this a case of excruciatingly bad timing. Scrooge would be proud. This is from Karen Hershenson of the Contra Costa Times, who has another story on a sort of a related issue, which she put out a couple of days later. And this is that story from December 14th, again from the Contra Costa Times. When a couple of Contra Costa County grand jurors came calling recently, Jane was eager to talk. The 65-year-old homeless woman told them about being evicted from her Walnut Creek apartment 3 years ago with her mentally disabled daughter and 2 grandchildren. And she told them about being frustrated with the focus on the war in Afghanistan. I feel really brokenhearted about the people who are lost, she said, but what bothers me is we've got to help what's here, too. Homeless people are having a war every day of their lives. Advocates have been screaming for months about an exploding public health crisis, growing numbers of desperate people, and woefully inadequate services. Someone is listening. The grand jurors were poking around a Walnut Creek homeless program a couple of weeks ago, trying to get a read on this escalating problem. The grand jurors say it's not a full-blown investigation, just fact-gathering, but let's hope it leads to some serious noise. With rents climbing, the economy sputtering, and temperatures plummeting, it's getting damn scary out there. Walnut Creek, one of these nights, someone's going to freeze to death on our tidy suburban streets. The jurors appeared unannounced at Fresh Start, a Walnut Creek program that provides showers, meals, and companionship for homeless people twice a week. They were asking me about the lack of beds and services in this county, says Director Susan Prather. I'm pleased they're looking into it because nobody else is even talking about it. A dozen homeless people, including Jane, not her real name, volunteered their stories, which must have blown these men away. What an eye-opener to hear it straight from folks forced to live this brutal life. I was emotional and I was upset. I was pouring my heart out, says Jane. I just started telling them how I felt. I felt that people don't want to be homeless. There's a lot of good people who have been kicked out of their homes because they've lost their jobs or rents got too outrageous. It's been an especially bleak week for the country's counties, thousands of homeless people up there in Contra Costa County. Nighttime temperatures have dropped in the life-threatening range, and Richmond banned camping just about anywhere in public. It's a cheap excuse to roust those living in campers or cars or with no option but to bed down at al fresco in a sleeping bag. Where these people are supposed to go is a mystery right up there with crop circles. Shelters are bursting at the seams with the waiting list for families topping 1,500 people, county homeless officials say. In the past years, National Guard armories were used for emergency shelter, but these funds disappeared. Wendell Brunner, Contra Costa's public health director, welcomes the grand jury's snooping. Programs have improved since the panel issued a critical report 2 years ago, he says, but the need remains great. And so people like Jane struggle to stay afloat. She has waited 3 years for Section 8 housing, moving from motel to motel with her brood. Telling her story made her feel, for one, like she mattered. You can talk and not feel like you've been degraded, she says. You walk into a welfare office and your head's down and it doesn't come up. Story from Karen Hershenson of the Contra Costa Times about a new Richmond anti-camping law. Of course, Santa Cruz doesn't need an anti-camping law. It has the sleeping ban, the law that criminalizes people from 11 to 8:30 every morning on pain of $54 fine. It has the blanket ban. Same hours, it's illegal to wrap a blanket around you. And, of course, the all-purpose camping ban. 24 hours a day, it is illegal to set up a campsite. That's our law in Santa Cruz, which Mayor Crone has refused to put on the agenda to discuss, to modify, or to suspend, though 3 years ago, he and Sugar voted that that whole thing be suspended over the winter unless there were a public health and safety concern in any particular case. Now that he has the votes, and this is really quite familiar with what happens with other council members, he doesn't want to do anything about it because it means he has to deal, in my mind, I think this is why he doesn't, although he won't explain it, he won't go on the air, he won't talk about it, he won't meet with homeless advocates to discuss why he won't put it on the agenda. He won't hold a special emergency meeting, even though he had a meeting the next day to deal with other issues for people in houses, but the homeless, unless they take matters into their own hands, get nothing. I'm afraid that's the reality of it, and that's going to be the case with Camp Paradise, who has been sitting around. It's not fair to say they've been sitting around, but they've been placing their trust in council members, placing their trust in mediators, placing their trust in good-natured people who somehow think that a lengthy dialogue is going to get them some kind of housing, some kind of campground site. It hasn't. I don't think it will, unless they have the power of the community behind them, unless they show they're willing to be the necessary thorn in the side of the community, not because they're trying to agitate, but because their very being alive apparently agitates the prejudice and bigotry of a lot of people, or a number of people, certainly a number of powerfully placed people in this city. So, you're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz. What's your view? Let me hear from you, 427-3772. And more important, let Camp Paradise hear from you if you want to support them. They need your support now. They need your support in terms of people down there with cameras, people down there with blankets, with tents, with tape recorders, people letting other people know what's going on. Calls to city council would probably be a good thing, and the phone number, if you want to get that, I'll be giving you in a moment, so grab your pencil and paper. It's an easy number to remember. I'll give you the phone number for both city council and Friends of Camp Paradise. You can give a call and just let them know that you're on tap for help tonight and tomorrow. I believe that there is a meeting planned for later today. I believe it's 5 o'clock. Is that right, Chris?
Yes.
I think it's 5 o'clock at the home of Carl Wilson, who is the a Friend of Camp Paradise coordinator, and his phone number is 425-425-4787. 425-4787. Hey, our first call of the day. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
This is Carl Wilson.
Well, of all people.
Make that 4 o'clock, okay?
Oh, 4 o'clock. Okay, 4 o'clock. And what is your address, Carl?
137 Felker Street.
137 Felker. And I guess what you do is you go to Denny's, which is right at Ocean and Highway 1, and then you come on down the street that's directly to the right of Denny's as you look at it face on, right?
Yeah.
And then it's about a half a block down on the left, and you're at 137 Felker Street?
Yeah.
And the phone number to call you at is 425-4787 in case
that's
people
right.
lose their way.
Yeah.
Anything you want to say?
Well, we're going to need some transportation on Monday. The people have to move out and they have to move somewhere. And we've got some camping gear that we're going to be moving and some people's stuff. So if you can make it to the meeting, or if you can get in touch, or if you can make it on Monday, if you can help out, let us know somehow. And we'll be cool, you know. Well, these people have to go someplace, and we're going to take them there.
So that's 4 o'clock today at 137 Felker Street, and then tomorrow, I guess in the morning, the people are going to be moving from the Sea Breeze Motel where they're living down at Beach in the Beach Flats area.
Yeah.
You can get the address there, and we can put that out on the air too.
Yeah.
Thank you, Carl.
Okay.
And this is Free Radio Santa Cruz. Phone lines are open 427-3772, 427-3772, or 427-FRSC. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hey, it's Thomas.
Hey, Thomas.
What's up?
Well, have you been listening to our fine radio show?
I have been listening to the last few minutes of it.
Okie doke. Well, that kind of, you probably are as much up to speed as anyone. The current situation, as you know, is that Camp Paradise, the clean and sober campground, previously along the San Lorenzo, before it was flooded out, has not been afforded an alternate campsite prospect by the city council. They have gone into their own winter quarters,
mm-hmm.
off to their own vacation without
yep.
doing anything on the issue.
Despite the fact that they've had months
yeah.
and months.
And if they made promises in October, they directed their staff to...
Despite all the eloquent statements by... council members about, you know, various and sundry things, that they were simply waiting for someone else to take care of the problem,
mm-hmm.
quote unquote. And it appears that, you know, they thought that the river would take care of it eventually, and, you know, I guess that's not the case, because the people have to go somewhere.
Or they hoped they would float off to Hawaii, but unfortunately that apparently didn't happen, and the people are still together. You see, in the past,
mm-hmm.
the council has been successful in allowing large rains, for example, to disperse the Coral Street open-air shelter back in 1995,
mm-hmm.
and letting protests against these things, which happened in 1996, an 8.5-month-long protest in front of City Hall, get dispersed by exhaustion and bad weather.
Well, you know, also, I believe that the council has a record of basically yielding just enough for whatever energy and momentum that existed, you know, to be diffused.
Siphoned off.
As people, you know, think that maybe something's going to happen, or that they think that the resolution has occurred, and or as they get focused on trying to create, you know, a solution along the lines of, you know, what's been indicated is possible. And then, you know, when they actually come back, well, it turns out that there's this problem or that problem, or, you know...
You know, I remember that most vividly, Thomas, back in 1995-96 when Scott Kennedy was kind of engaging in a similar role as he's doing now, although I think he was more hostile toward a campsite. But they were about to remove 200 people from the Coral Street open-air shelter,
mm-hmm.
and they, Celia Scott and Catherine Byers were tisking. They were on the city council and running around saying they were looking for a campsite and a campground. They looked there and they looked there, but, you know, they couldn't find one that worked. Oh, dear. And people just got sent off to the state parks for a couple of weeks, and then they began to die. We actually had Dan Hopkins tabulating the number of homeless deaths in the early 1996. He ended up standing before city council, relatively mild-mannered man, Dan Hopkins, and calling them murderers. He said that specifically of Kennedy and Rotkin,
mm-hmm.
and I frankly have never heard those charges refuted in terms of the fact that the city council had the power to keep a community together which can help people in emergency
mm-hmm.
situations, and it instead denied them that right, denied them that power. And the pretext they used then was that the Citizens Committee for the Homeless is going to begin building community house. In fact, that didn't start for another 18 months.
Well, that
people
was also
died.
The whole... I mean, if you look back to, like, this whole Safe Sleeping Zones initiative, I mean, there was a tremendous amount of, like, energy and momentum there. I mean, the council was under a tremendous amount of pressure to come up with a solution. I believe David Silva had, like, 30 people participating in his Rolling Fast and calling up, you know, city council regularly.
Right, Huff people marched to city council, took over the council chambers at
mm-hmm.
one point. We were sitting in the coffee klatch for 10 days. Sugar was going bananas because
mm-hmm.
he didn't like having people in those public areas.
You know, then there was a threat of a tent city, in fact, at City Hall. We declared that Huff would start a tent city in mid-May, and when Sugar said, okay, we'll put something on the agenda about safe sleeping zones, we said, fine, that's good faith, mm-hmm. we'll back off. We backed off, and then, of course, Sugar betrayed, wasn't so much Sugar, it was Byers, but Sugar also was engaged in what amounted to, and ultimately, a betrayal, because these people could and should be advocating for the need to do something around, you know, decriminalizing homelessness at the very least, and allowing people to shelter themselves. You know.
Well, you know, from my perspective, I mean, it's the issue, you know, when it comes down to it, you know, regardless of camping bans, sleeping bans, et cetera, is that everybody needs a safe and a legal place to lay their head at night.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the city council has... you know, an obligation to serve all of the citizens,
mm-hmm.
and they're not doing it. The most that you hear from them is, you know, small scale solutions that might serve a few people,
mm-hmm.
and you know, even those take like a massive amount of energy and effort for people to get considered.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it's tremendously frustrating for those of us who are housed, and I can't even imagine how frustrating it must be for the people who don't have a house, don't have a safe place.
Well, I think that what we really reach at the end is what we found up in Portland, Oregon, and Seattle, and in Canada is mm-hmm. that people these solutions only come up when people themselves create them.
Right.
That the city waiting for the city council is the last the most foolish thing to do.
Right.
But what they will do is they will jump at the head of the parade once you've got your parade mm-hmm. going and try to hijack it, and maybe if they can get something done, it's not going to matter so much. I suppose it really does matter, because I think that when they hijack it, that's the end of the parade. They just stop where they are, and you get as much as you've gotten done up to then. You don't get much more. But I think that if Camp Paradise successfully sets up in another area and the community supports them,
mm-hmm.
and it may have to support them for months, and I don't mean support them with money, I don't mean support them by letting them lounge around. I mean, Camp Paradise is willing to go out there and clean up property,
yes.
clear up property.
Mm-hmm.
Significant number of people out there are working. Another part of their community is disabled.
What people need to do is you know, the city council, you know, clearly doesn't have the ability to do anything proactively or particularly positive, but you know, at the same time, they have the ability to you know, cause less than positive things to happen.
Yeah, calling the cops.
And so, you know, what people need to do is they need to consistently and continually. I mean, it may frustrate the hell out of people to have to write their city council member, you know, once a week and call them and mention this every time that they see them. But that's the only way that, you know, the...
Right, although in the meantime, I would say spend a lot of time supporting the camp directly
right.
while you're doing this.
Yes.
I mean, the number to call for city council, for those who have been waiting, I was going to give that number a few minutes ago, 420-5017, pretty easy to remember, 420-5017, 420-5017. That's a 24-hour cold line, as I call it, because it ain't hot, that's for sure, but it's available for you to leave a message. And I would encourage people to call and say, leave Camp Paradise alone until you've got an alternate site.
All those calls are logged, and a summary of them is given to the city council. Every written and email communication, you know, is copied and filed. And, you know, the weight of those things, you know, is just, it's one more, you know...
The straw that breaks a camel's back
yeah.
might be there. I don't know if they log the calls. I think that you should also mention when you call, anybody out there
yeah.
is about to call, I want this call logged, and I want to call back acknowledging that this has been received.
Mm-hmm.
Because it took us, when we tried to do this back in 1999, when the task force to examine the camping ordinance, yet another one of their bogus committees was running around supposedly doing things but actually just sucking off energy and getting us to wait and give
mm-hmm.
up hope. They told us they weren't logging the calls, so it's not clear what they're doing there. So it's certainly, however, a form of pressure on them. And give a call to Carl Wilson at 425-4787. Now, Thomas, I know that you're also a member of the Green Party,
mm-hmm.
and though I'm a constant critic of the Green Party's failure to, for example, hold its Green Party former mayor, now council member Fitzmaurice and Ed Porter accountable for...
Mm-hmm.
Essentially, Fitzmaurice for direct anti-homeless actions, Ed Porter for ambivalent behavior But, you know, I mean, he's made a few initiatives in the last few months that apparently have gone nowhere, and then he's disappeared into the hills again. Nonetheless, Greens at a grassroots level, a number of them, have stood behind Camp Paradise. David Wisdom put a huge ad in the Santa Cruz Comic News, and I guess a couple of other places. Grassroots Greens like yourself have held meetings. In fact, I think you had a plan to set up a tent city at City Hall if there were an attack on Camp Paradise at one point.
Yes, and, you know, there's a substantial, you know, and high-level support for, you know, action on homeless issues and for Camp Paradise specifically within the Green Party. And what's happening, actually, is all registered Greens are going to be, even if you register today, are going to be eligible to participate and vote on the endorsements, you know, for the at the Green Party General Assembly at the beginning of January. And there are going to be county supervisors who are going to be requesting the Green Party Green Party endorsement. And I think it would be a very positive thing if the public asked them to, you know, to document whatever record they have on these issues and what they are actually going to do so that they can be held accountable.
Yeah,
and if they don't have answers, and if they haven't had a good record, mm-hmm. then you know, the people who show up there shouldn't vote for them.
Right. Of course, the problem has been that they say one thing and then they go and do another, as Fitzmaurice and Porter showed.
And
know.
So that's one of the things that I'm working on.
Right.
Is going to be introducing a resolution at the business part of that meeting, asking the Green Assembly to disendorse Tim Fitzmaurice and Ed Porter for their lack of follow-through on this very specific commitments that they made.
Long overdue. But getting back to what we can do to help Camp Paradise immediately, any suggestions? I think that there's sort of some there was a point at which Camp Paradise thought it could get to the state parks, and that's what Larry Templeton, the co-founder of Camp Paradise, was saying a couple of days ago. But then apparently the word came through that the parks are so hostile to the homeless that they weren't going to allow them a group rate. And they weren't going to allow them into the parks, which sounded peculiar to me, because I don't know how can they discriminate against such a group of people.
I don't know.
But I know that in Santa Cruz, we learned that this summer, the Santa Cruz County, of all the counties mm-hmm. of the state, adopted a unique policy, and I believe this is the case, although I've never heard it confirmed at the state level. I've never heard it denied either, but I think it is the case, that whereas other counties, you're allowed to stay, I think, up to a total of 30 days in a year in the parks in any one park, and up to 15 days continuously. In Santa Cruz, you're allowed only to be 15 days continuously and 30 days per year for all the parks mm-hmm. in Santa Cruz County. So if you stay in one and then you move to another, it doesn't matter. At 30 days is the maximum you can stay total for the whole year in Santa Cruz parks. And this, I understand from talking to Michael Schmidt, who apparently had some conversations with some of these officials, or heard somebody who did, was a deliberate anti-homeless policy that's being pursued. So,
well, yeah, I mean, I believe I heard one of the park officials specifically state that it was, you know, specifically directed against homeless people. It was in the newspaper saying that, you know, basically they felt that, you know, quote unquote, they had an obligation to serve all the public and not just the homeless citizens, and you know, that therefore that they enacted this rule that was specifically designed and targeted against homeless people, just like the ostensible street sweeping ordinance in Harvey West Park.
Right, you know, Emily Riley's law.
Yeah. So mm-hmm. I mean, specific things you can do for Camp Paradise, you know, right now, on a practical basis, are, you know, call Carl,
Carl
come
Wilson.
Down and help them, like, you know, relocate.
Come to the meeting today at 4:00 at Carl's house to help plan. That's mm-hmm. at 137 Felker Street.
And make sure the city council hears from you. I mean, if they hear from 100 people tomorrow morning, if when they press the freaking button on the answering machine, it plays off for 2 hours, that's going to, you know, prevent any immediate negative reaction to whatever happens.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's both physically helping out with Camp Paradise, you know, helping out whatever other ways you can, and keeping the pressure up on the council. I mean, it's the fact that, you know, there was so much publicity, you know, around what was happening, and there was such a strong grassroots movement in support of Camp Paradise, you know, that prevented
the
city council or the police from doing anything
dramatically
negative.
Right. So we've been
talking. They couldn't do anything positive, but at the very least, it prevented them from engaging in their normal, you know, bulldozer behavior.
Right. Exactly. Well, we've been talking with Thomas Levitt, who's on the Green Party. I guess you're a longtime Green Party stalwart, and you're also been a Camp Paradise stalwart.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, then there's the problem that I'll be talking about on the air. I'm going to continue. I'm going to let this line go free. But thank you, Thomas, for calling.
You.
And maybe we'll see you at 4 o'clock.
All right. Bye bye.
Bye bye.
Phone lines are open here at Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. That's what you're tuned to. The number to call if you want to be on air on this issue or on a related one is 427-3772. Yeah, it's not just the city council, which is just a major negative force. Frankly, it's often people who are well-intentioned mediators or intermediaries who somehow believe that by being nice to the city council, abandoning strident protest or standing up for yourself is somehow going to get them on your team, get them on your side. Or some people have the illusion that they are the power brokers. They can sort of step in and take the steps that will somehow persuade the city council that it's only a matter of being reasonable. Well, in fact, if it had been a matter of being reasonable, the city council would have dealt with this issue decades ago. Just like with the vote for women, the vote for blacks, unions, it's not a matter of being reasonable. It's a matter of power. It is really quite simple. If you have the power, they will listen to you. If you're willing to give it up, they won't. And if you're willing to give it up to intermediaries who somehow think that by talking nice in closed meetings with city council you're going to get somewhere, that doesn't work. And we've seen that over the last, I've seen that time and time again, ranging from Sherry Connable's Coalition for a Safe Place to Sleep in 1990, when the homeless movement was split in half, and Sherry, in a well-intentioned but a bad idea move of splitting off the homeless movement in half in order to please then-Mayor Wormhout, her attempt to get a city council to vote a safe place to sleep failed, and she did this by severing herself from the radical part of the homeless movement that was going to proceed with an ongoing protest at the post office, and was actually having a lot of effect in that protest. And the same thing happened again in 1995 when Connable and Barbara Riverwoman, 96 actually, tried the state parks plan. Instead of defending the campground area that happened, that was being held at Coral Street, and staying there and encouraging people to come and support it there, they agreed to this off to the state parks Rotkin proposal, with the result that people, eventually the refugees, started moving from state park to state park, gradually lost the power to hold together as a group, and the state parks right-wingers struck back, saying the city won't deal with its own problems, it's dumping them in the state parks. So it's an important thing to realize that the power in this situation doesn't come from power broker intermediaries, even people with money and goodwill, like Paul Lee, who is apparently successful in getting the city council's ear on the Santa Cruz Service Corps, but is he also equally interested in making sure that a Camp Paradise exists, or is that sort of secondary? Because after all, any homeless people can be a part of the Santa Cruz Service Corps. You don't even need them to have a place to stay. They just sort of wander in and out, like the William James Work Association, which was two decades ago, not a bad plan, but it's not really related to the fundamental issue of homeless shelter and survival. The same sort of thing has happened with some of Lee's proposals in the past. This is just my opinion, and other people can disagree with me, and I don't say that Lee hasn't been positive in providing some tents and providing some potential funding and providing some support and helping to get this headquarters open over at the Coral and River Street. But the real question is now, where do people go now? And the fact that this issue has to be debated 24 hours before people are kicked out of their hotel rooms, to me, is just incredible. I mean, I was ranting and raving about it weeks ago, and, you know, of course, that's what I do. I try to raise the issue and then get denounced for being too caustic, you know. But what can you do? That's just how it goes. That goes with the territory. I'm going to play a little more music, and then we may actually have our special guest on to talk a bit about her thoughts on this issue. Chris Fredrickson has been with Camp Paradise for half a year, struggling with them in court, out of court, in the mud, out of the mud, indoors, outdoors, you name it. But let's give her a chance to gather her thoughts, and here's a little music. You want to join us? 427-3772.
Gonna run out in the night like a cowboy with a lights turned bright. And sucked a generation dry of dignity till we was pale and weak. Last nail on the coffin, so to speak.
Grito Serpentino. This is Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM, and I'm your notorious host, Uncle Robert, and you are tuned to the station that lets you talk on the air. But you have to phone in if you want to talk, 427-3772. You might want to be interested in helping at another time, in which case you can contact HUFF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, at 423-HUFF, 423-4833. We have HUFF meetings every Wednesday morning, 8:30 in the morning, Baker's Square Restaurant. That's on Ocean Street, a couple of blocks from the freeway entrance. So come on down and, you know, buy your own coffee, in which, unless you need to panhandle, in which case we can kick in a few quarters and see what we can do. We are scheming to help out, well, to help out isn't quite the word, but to restore civil rights for people if they want to stand up and reclaim them. You can't, you know, ignore your rights and they go away. It's the old story. Which is what the nation is finding out as Bush moves forward with his militarism schemes. And unfortunately, we're in the middle of that one, too. But that's another story. 427-3772 is the number to call here on Free Radio if you want to be a part of this whole process. Let's see. We have with us in the studio Chris Fredrickson. Say hello, Chris.
Hello.
Belly up to the mic. About an inch away, you should be.
Good morning.
A little closer. Say something.
This should work.
Talk loud.
Okay.
There you go. So, Chris, how long have you been with the camp?
I've been with the camp since the middle of June this year.
And you yourself are a person who has some legal skills.
Yes.
And you were in sort of, you were observing the Camp Paradise 4 trial where they unsuccessfully tried to use a necessity defense in Commissioner Joseph's court. And I guess that case will soon be on appeal if you can find the proper legal representation, right?
Well, we're working on it. Kind of a gang approach, actually.
Which may be important because if you are setting up a camp in 24 hours, as apparently you need to, how many people are involved in Camp Paradise at the moment? Any estimates?
It's our numbers have dwindled some. I believe we're down to between 25 and 30 people at the moment.
And these are folks currently being put up at the Seabreeze Inn?
Correct.
And I guess your rent runs out tomorrow, right?
Tomorrow at 11 o'clock, yes.
And, I mean, it wasn't like you guys insisted on getting accommodations indoors, right? I mean, you were willing to move to another campsite.
Yes, we were.
But the city, you actually met with city officials several times in the last week, right?
Before the flood.
And
before
you,
the flood, you mean?
Well, you met before the flood. I think you also
before
met
and after, yes.
And you, they know of your need to move to another campsite, right?
Yes, they do.
And did Scott Kennedy immediately offer his backyard, perhaps?
No, he did not.
Did Christopher Crone suggest that... in spite of his great fondness for the polo ponies and the Poganip and allowing that pristine area to remain pristine, that he would suggest that the depot site possibly be brought back or the San Lorenzo benchlands, any of the various areas, well, three of them were specifically mentioned by city council that the city manager was supposed to report on in November. And here we are in mid-December. What did the mayor have to say about all this when you talked to him?
Well, obviously, still on the agenda from, I believe it was one of the November meetings, are the three sites that Scott Kennedy had managed to somehow preserve on agenda, which are under staff study, which means, as I understand it, which means they're dead fish. But the two, in reality, the two sites that are really still under close consideration, and that's due a lot to one-on-one lobbying by supporters, are the depot site and the, and this wasn't even one of the original sites, but the Poganip site, which is up by the clubhouse, and it's actually a paved site up by the old clubhouse.
Mm-hmm.
So it's Poganip, but it's not Poganip that they feel that we as homeless people could possibly destroy.
And these aren't sites that you're going to, you know, put up permanent structures at and
no.
Lay down roots in. These are temporary sites, right?
Yes. And these are fashioned out of the new thrust of the service corps, Santa Cruz Service Corps, that Camp Paradise has somehow got to magically convert itself into so that we become a working force.
Well, and the service corps, I know, has recently set up an office. I guess that's the city has... You know, I mean, the skeptic in me says this, they're going to buy off Paul Lee with the Service Corps office. But, I mean, you know, I have myself, I've had seen a lot of problems with Paul Lee in the past, but he's also done some good things. What's your take on Paul? How are things going? How has he contributed to this whole process?
Well, he has, he's been in and out, but lately he's been a lot more in terms of... obviously, the Service Corps has been moving forward. We do have a new office on the corner of Coral and River. And by the way, folks, do come down to the Christmas party on Tuesday and eat lots of food. Drink lots of whatever they're serving, 5:30.
That's at the corner of Highway 1 and Coral Street?
No, it's the corner of Coral and River.
Coral and River Street.
Yeah, the old house that's being repainted by our folks.
That's Highway 1 as River Street.
It is not.
I don't mean Highway 1. I mean,
hello.
I mean Highway...
9.
Highway 9. There we go. You're right.
Anyway, take advantage of the generosity. Come eat and drink. 5:30.
So this is 5:30 on...
Tuesday.
Anyway,
he seems to be showing signs of being a lot more present with our folks and to be actually understanding our argument that Paradise is a community that looks after its own and actually seems to be not... engaging so much in the separation of the core from the community that Ed Porter and some of the other council people are engaged in. In other words, he seems to be buying into the idea that we are family and we need accommodations that suit that arrangement.
Mm-hmm.
Whether he is just buying into it to get us quieted down, I don't know, and I'm not sure that I won't go so far as to say that I don't trust him, but I'm not sure that that's not just to appease us.
Well, I know that there, as I said, well-intentioned people always often think that if you only can kind of say the right thing to the right city council members, it's really a matter of quickly getting something passed and done. But and in theory, it should be that way because it's not really that hard to do in terms of the actual actions that will be needed to be done. But it requires political will and courage that none of these council members have and that they're not likely to get unless they can say, oh, those mean, nasty, homeless hordes are going to overrun us and we'll get something even worse unless we take some action. And then they also have to be able to put the positive spin on it, which is, well, here's a community that's clean and sober. It's been doing all this wonderful work. You know, it's worked in Portland, Oregon. There's a number of people who just can't use shelter services because they're vets who can't go indoors, or they're people who aren't suited for this sort of thing, or there's just no shelter indoors, or there's a picture ID problem, whatever. There are plenty of good reasons to proceed with a winter campground, and there are plenty of good reasons to proceed with the Santa Cruz Service Corps. So I guess the question is now, where are you going to go? And I know that there was some talk of this being sort of a secret site and people would kind of move out in the middle of the night and try to find a place. But I don't know how secret you can be when there's just one day left and if anybody wants, they can watch what's going on. What's your thought on this?
Well, we've, between Larry and I alone, we've gone through several incarnations on this topic in the last 3 or 4 days. We were going to try to get the camp into the state parks, and that proved to be quite a problem. And then we were going to go to a very secret site that only Larry knew about, and that proved to be a problem. So now that we're down to the 24-hour mark, as you know, we've had a couple emergency summit meetings, so to speak, and I believe by 4 o'clock we will have to know one of two sites that we will pick in the next hour or two. and I don't really feel comfortable discussing them without Larry here, but we will obviously know if people can possibly come out and help. It won't be much of a secret by that time.
So that's going to be 4 o'clock at 137 Felker Street, the home of Camp Paradise supporter Carl Wilson. Camp Felker Street is right off the freeway, Highway 17, right next to, it's at Borders Denny's, 137 Felker, phone number to call for more information in case you get lost, 425-4787, 425-4787. We're on the line, I should say we're on the air here with Chris Fredrickson of Camp Paradise, and we're going to try to get Larry Templeton on his cellular phone. We may be able to get through with that. That's a possibility.
We're trying that now. You can hear us ringing away as we attempt to get through to him.
Hello.
Hey, Larry, you're on the air. You're on free radio.
Well, hi there.
How's it going? You're doing a church service now, or?
Pardon me?
Are you at the church or at the flea market?
I'm still out here at the flea market.
I gotcha. I know that there's, I guess, a church service also going on down at the beach.
Yeah.
And we're in the studio with Chris Fredrickson, myself, and I guess Thomas Levitt called in. We talked to Carl Wilson. And Chris has just said that I guess that there's this emergency meeting at 4 o'clock at Carl's house, which I guess you'll be coming to?
At 4 o'clock today?
Uh-huh.
Okay, yeah, I'll be there.
That's great. And I guess that time everyone will announce a site as to where you're going to be going tomorrow, or else certainly be looking for support for movement on that site. What's your take
on
all this?
We're trying to get as much support as we can now.
Larry, we need to talk.
The city already gave us our office. We got the office open now, but we still have nowhere to live or stay. So we're going to be setting up another campsite again. I'm hoping we can get enough help, or if anybody has any land they'd like to rent for a campground for the service corps, we'd be more than willing to rent it. Or if they have something they'd just like to have people come out and do a little bit of work on their property for the chance to stay there and show them what kind of group we are.
Indeed, and you have been successful in
pardon me?
You have been successful in doing that kind of work in the past, and persuading the community that Paradise is a positive factor.
Yes.
So, you want to give us some idea of what's happened in the last week in terms of, I know you went to the management of the state parks. You want to talk a little bit about how that went?
Yeah, we went to the Parks and Recreation. The only concern I see that the parks have is they're afraid that we're going to be taking their jobs from them.
Uh-huh.
That's what their main concern was, is if they start an organization like what we have, they say, well, what about our jobs, you know?
Mm-hmm.
We ain't out to take their jobs from them. We're just keeping ourselves busy.
Well, I know you met with those folks on Wednesday, right?
Yes.
But then you also went to the state parks, which is different than the city parks and rec. This was this, and you had originally thought that they were going to allow for some kind of group rate, and there was going to be some opportunity to move into Henry Cowell or New Brighton Beach.
That's what we were hoping. We called them, and they won't let an organization like ours move into the parks and do that kind of work. Since Wednesday, we had that meeting with Parks and Rec. Right now, we're just in the air again. We don't know where we can camp or where we'll be able to stay or anything like that. Our motel vouchers run out Monday morning. And after that, we have nowhere to go.
You know, what I'm going to do is I'm going to put you on the phone with Chris so the two of you can do a little chatting on air, and then I can give you an opportunity to chat off air since I know you've been busy out there at the flea market. Anything you want to say to the general population other than show up at 4 o'clock and, I guess, show up tomorrow morning at the Seabreeze Inn? You know the address out there, the Seabreeze Motel?
I know it's on 2nd Street.
So
that's all I know.
Yeah,
by the boardwalk.
It's 2nd Street it's parallel with the boardwalk. It's actually parallel with the Big Dipper, almost. If you look straight to the boardwalk, you can see the Big Dipper across the parking lot from the Seabreeze Motel, which is one street back from the boardwalk street. It's a one-way street. There's usually parking places along it, particularly in the cold weather in the winter. So we'll be seeing you, I guess, at 4 o'clock at Carl Wilson's Friends of Camp Paradise meeting. And let me put you, do you want to do a little talk, have an exchange with Chris publicly here, or why don't we do that?
I'll talk a little bit away from you.
That'd be fine with me.
Can I talk with him?
Yeah.
Larry,
Hi.
How you doing?
I'm doing fine, but
you're on the air.
Okay. We've jumped into action here with our usual advisors.
Yep.
And we've found a couple very good sites, one in particular that I think will work out just fine. I just wanted to let you know that.
Okay.
So I'll be talking to you this afternoon, but a couple of them look good. I want to talk them over with you, of course, first before we release any information.
Right.
But
okay.
I think that we can mobilize people. Carl, as usual, is right there with us, and if we can get some help, I think we can get the camp out and set up.
Now I'm going to kind of interrupt here and allow the two to have their private conversation. You can now speak privately to Larry, so we don't have to have the entire community hearing this. And I'm going to return you to some other information I was passing out earlier, having to do with homeless issues more broadly and more generally. Here's an article from the San Francisco Examiner by Nina Wu. Newsom wants to fingerprint homeless. Tired of the city doling out dough to thousands of John Does, Supervisor Gavin Newsom said Tuesday, if the homeless want money from the city, then the taxpayer should have a right to know who is receiving it. It isn't clear exactly where or how finger imaging technology will be used, except as part of the of what Newsom calls a centralized case management information system in the initiative he introduced to overhaul the delivery of homeless services. The finger imaging technology created by Texas billionaire and former presidential candidate Ross Perot is used in other cities such as New York, Seattle, and Portland. Riverside County also approved of a biometrics imaging system that it plans to launch in January to keep better track of the homeless staying in the shelters as well as their health needs. Fingerprinting will be voluntary, not mandatory. San Mateo mandates fingerprinting for recipients of food stamps and the CalWORKs welfare program, but not the general assistance check. In San Francisco, recipients of the city's monthly $320 general assistance check already are required to submit fingerprints under a state mandate, said Maureen Davidson, spokeswoman for the Department of Human Services. The data are entered into the state fingerprint imaging system in order to prevent fraud and to keep applicants from receiving multiple checks from several counties. Despite this system, it isn't too difficult to swindle. The district attorney's office has a special investigations unit which prosecutes cases of fraud perpetrated by those receiving general assistance, Davidson says. Newsom's initiative also proposes the creation of a Department of Homeless Services, along with Supervisor Chris Daley. This is all up in San Francisco. He's calling for a fiscal audit of the city budget to determine just where and how much money for the homeless is spent. Technologies are already in use in other cities across the nation to move quickly and accurately provide homeless services while maintaining client confidentiality, Newsom said. These technologies need to be investigated to see whether San Francisco can gain the same benefits. If we did not explore these technologies, we would be a fraud. The very notion, however, has homeless advocates up in arms. What is the public gain, said Paul Bowden, director of the Coalition on Homelessness. We don't do fingerprinting for people doing an interest tax reduction and paying their mortgages. What this does is eliminate any pretense that an individual might be homeless, seeking a bed, and wanting to maintain some privacy in that state of homelessness. Daley, the champion of homeless causes, said the technology is too expensive and is tainted by its association with law enforcement. Fingerprinting, like it or not, is associated with the criminal justice system, he said. Bowden also says he sees the proposal as a profit-making strategy by Perot's company. It's really a sales pitch to say poor people are going to be cheating your system and here's a way to track them. The rich get rich fingerprinting and tracking the poor. The rich get rich fingerprinting and tracking the poor. And that's a story from the San Francisco Examiner about a proposed fingerprinting proposal up in San Francisco. Here's a story from New York City, December 14th. Homeless Angel, A Blessing at Ground Zero by Douglas Montero. She's an angel who stands at the gates of hell. Linda Bishop patrols the perimeter of Ground Zero daily, holding an American flag, greeting its workers, and guiding awestruck New Yorkers and tourists through the mayhem with intelligent precision. She calls herself the head of Hell's Chamber of Commerce. Bishop, 45, of New Hampshire, doesn't get paid to help visitors or treat the dirt-covered, overworked, stressed-out Ground Zero workers like conquering heroes just by acknowledging them. Some don't even know that behind the broad smile and piercing blue eyes, she is a homeless woman with mental problems. Angels come to Earth in disguises. Some come as paupers, said Bill, a 42-year-old construction worker who has watched Bishop for the past month. She's crazy, but don't get me wrong. But I never prejudge anyone. When I look at her, I can tell she has a good soul. She greets everyone with a smile, waving her flag. A lot of people who come here are under a lot of stress, and she somehow changes their demeanor. In less than a minute, she can provide a slew of Ground Zero details. Ask Thomas Scarlato, 38, an emotional victim of September 11th, so charmed by Bishop's magic, he walks away claiming God rested on her shoulder. That's a Christmas tree decorated with angels cut out by school children, Bishop told Scarlatto at a machine gun pace. That's the tent put up by the Salvation Army. That's where the debris is separated. Scarlatto, who visits the site once every 3 weeks and cries, said he's never met anyone like Bishop in past visits. Bishop arrived at Ground Zero November 1st after a friend gave her $50 for a bus ticket. She spent most of her life in New Hampshire, where she became mentally ill and had to be committed in 1999 and April 2001. Bishop says she has a bachelor's degree in history and a 15-year-old daughter who lives with her former husband. Arriving broke, she lived on the streets before settling down in a homeless shelter in the Bronx. I plan to stay here as long as I can, said Bishop. I talk to people. I try to help people understand the enormity of what happened because I've been here long enough to understand.
Así corre el agua. Mi abuelita me decía, como corre mi gente en las calles de San Isidro, huyendo de las balas en la migra. Se llama anti-immigrant sentiment, pero nomás es otra manera para quitar la educación y los derechos de mi raza, para que puedan seguir dándonos golpes y palazos al lado del Interstate 5, para que esa esclavitud moderna que existe en los campos de San Joaquín nunca se acabe. Justicia es una gringa vieja con dos sirvientas salvadoreñas y tres jardineros de Michoacán que les paga a sus ilegales con miradas de disgusto y ojos acusativos. Igualdad. Ya no habla español o quizás está completamente sorda porque nunca responde los gritos de mi gente. Y libertad, esa ruca se juntó con un gabacho porque su madre siempre le decía que eso iba a ser la única manera en que se iba a mejorar. Así corre el agua, mi raza, fuerte como los ríos del destino, y así vienen los hijos de Guatemoc, como un río fuerte.
Grito Serpentino. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. We've got some TB in the studio, but does that bother us? Not a chance. We are tough. We are rough. Here's a story from the Village Voice, December 4th. Missing and forgotten where the towers fell. Homeless people disappeared. Their friends are still searching. From the Margins Erased by Andrew Friedman. There was this one lady named Arlene and another named Marianne. A shoeshine guy named Jack, a guy named Keith, an elderly woman named Rose sat by the PATH train bathroom. Marvin, a tall gray-haired man with a dark complexion, stood around Tower 1 every morning, there by the N train, regular as a dripping faucet. Carlos, a tall Jamaican some call Ross, wore his hair in dreadlocks and thoroughly cursed any social worker who tried to move him. When people asked him his problem, he rubbed his goatee and explained that it wasn't homelessness, it was spiritual. Once in a while, the neatly dressed beanpole Mr. Man came striding through the concourse. The self-appointed mayor of the World Trade Center, he assigned himself the task of delivering grand, free-floating oratories to passers-by. He was scheduled to meet with the President of the United States soon. They all used the World Trade Center as a place to sleep, panhandle, or pass the time before September 11th. They all remain unaccounted for. Their friends and acquaintances fear they died when the towers fell, perhaps only a small portion of the still uncounted street people who perished that day. No one papered the city with flyers bearing their pictures. No family members came in with their toothbrushes to identify their DNA. Maybe their families didn't even know where they were. They died in the anonymous way they lived. Their memories now depend on the informal network of people who saw them every week, yet perhaps knew them only by a nickname, a first name, a familiar face. Ospie Wiley collected cans at the Twin Towers for the last 5 years. He ran a table for the United Homeless Organization at the corner of Liberty and Church Streets. When the planes hit, he ran, but he does not think everybody did. The public should recognize that homeless people lost their lives at the World Trade Center too, says Wiley, 47. I've been going down there quite a long time now, and I have a strong feeling that a lot of people did not get out. An investigation needs to take place, because those homeless people could have left behind survivors, too. A lot of people on the street still got families. The United Homeless Organization is keeping a tally of the missing, a listing that so far contains more than 50 names and whatever descriptions people could provide. They held a memorial service last week in Union Square, where they observed a moment of silence and a minister prayed for the dead. The towers drew homeless people from across the city. They formed their own culture on the broad, bustling concourse filled with stores. They slept near the E train in the long hallway that stretched out from the A in the tunnels of the PATH train. They hung out on the ledge by the Chase Bank ATM, in the nook next to the Golden Nugget Jewelry, by the phone bank at Building 5, by the entrance to the 1 and 9. In the summer months, they congregated on the plaza by the fountain. In the early mornings, they crowded the sinks and washed up together in the bathrooms. The Trade Center had energy to it. It was clean, safe, and warm in the winter. Some old-timers had been there 15 years and knew the place up and down. They would sleep by our store, said Samuel Bedgen, who managed the Ben & Jerry's by the South Tower. We had a kiosk, and it was a warm place to sleep. I'd wake them up in the morning at 5:30 and give them a cup of coffee. You'd see the same guys over and over again, not new people. The guys there knew the routine, where to stop, how long till the police came around. Those guys lived there. It was their home. With all the traders and financiers charging around, some feeling generous after...